All right, we're back for another show. Today, I've got Adam Bullock with us. He is the Vice President of Ticket Sales and Service with the Atlanta Dream and the WNBA. It looks like we've crossed some paths a little bit or pretty close over the years, but thanks for joining me, Adam.
No, thank you for having me, Andrew. This is very exciting.
Yeah, I always like to kind of just start off with, you know, your journey in sports. You're now an executive with a WNBA team. You know, walk us through kind of your journey from, you know, where you went to school all the way up to where you're at today.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I kind of have an unusual path, I guess you could say. I went to school at the University of Florida, where I double majored in political science and history. Go Gators, of course. Very fortunate. Right out of school, I got to work in the politics realm. I got to work on the 2008 presidential campaign, which was, you know, something I'll never forget. But quite frankly, it didn't take very long for me to realize I do not want to spend the rest of my life in politics. So once the election was over, I had made the decision to go back to school and get my master's in sports administration from Nova Southeastern University down in South Florida. At the end of the day, like so many of us in sports, I knew I love sports, right? I wanted to be around it. I was an athlete growing up. I knew that waking up every day, the sports business would probably be one of those things where it's like, I can't wait to hit the ground running. So really cool experience in that I got to do some interning for a local wrestling promotion. I had visions when I got into school of working in either Major League Baseball or the WWE one day, right? Like those were my two big goals. So did some work for a local wrestling promotion, and it was interesting. You know, I got to do things like sell tickets. I got to sell sponsorships. I got to do marketing. So I got to touch on a number of different facets of our business. I was doing it on a volunteer basis though, and just kind of trying to gain experience and meet the right people and whatnot. After a little while though, like so many of us, you know, I was ready to make some money, ready to get paid, and wanted to be on the
nothing the wrong with some money.
No, no, money. You know, bills don't pay themselves, right? So I'll never forget the summer of 2014. I applied and interviewed with Andrew. It must have been 25 to 30 teams, you know, from across all of the major sports all over the country. And I'll never forget after just I got brought up to Orlando. I was living in South Florida at the time. I got called up to Orlando to come to the Orlando Magic sales camp for all their newbies to see who would be part of their team. And unfortunately, I didn't get the job. And I remember afterwards just feeling like, man, I've gone through this process so many times and nothing is happening. I even did the thing, even at 30 years old, called my mom and was just like, Mom, what am I doing? And you know, the very next week I wound up having an interview with the Florida Panthers at the NHL. So here I am interviewing with teams all across the country, as far away as like the Portland Trailblazers, right? And the team that's closest to my house is who I get the interview with. So I walked in there and really had nothing to lose, right? Like I had been turned down a number of times by that point and wound up performing really well. And after a couple of rounds of interviews, was offered the job as new business account executive. Started on the worst attended day in the history of Florida Panthers franchise. Announced attendance of like 8,000, but honestly, it was probably more like 5,000, right?
Right.
So right away, it was like, all right, we got some work to do. But really cool in one sense. I got to work for the team that I grew up around in South Florida. Yeah. I was blessed with just some great people in leadership roles. First and foremost, Eric Cusin. He was the chief revenue officer at the time, and he actually is the one that hired me, gave me my first training. And to this day, while I'm training new people, I'm going back to the stuff that I learned from him 10 years ago. So very fortunate. But, you know, I started in that role. I was 29, 30, right? I'm a little bit older than most of my companions at that time. And I knew right away, like, I want to move up as fast as possible. I want to be the absolute best. That's probably my military family upbringing. You know, if you're going to do something, be the best at it. So I was very fortunate. After 6 months, I was promoted to premium seating, where I was selling the private clubs and the luxury suites in the then BB&T Center where the Florida Panthers played. Also doing all the concerts that came through there. So is really cool, right? I get to do hockey. I get to do concerts. It's a year-round thing. At the end of the day, though, we're selling hockey in South Florida, not the easiest thing in the world. But, again, great mentors down there, people like Greg Lynch, who really made it clear, like, we're not selling hockey. We're selling results, right?
Yeah.
Here I am in a very middle-class upbringing, and now I'm asking companies for a credit card for six figures. It's a little daunting, but, you know, you learn the right way to go about it, and really it's about providing results, so...
Anything stick out there? I mean, you know, I know the Panthers have always, you know, had a tough time. Obviously now they're doing really well on the ice and even in the stands. But like, I know for years they had trouble. There's so much to do in South Florida. You know, you have, I mean, pretty much anything. The weather's great that time of year as well. So anything specific that sticks out that, you know, you focused on there. I know it's a lot different in that market than a lot of other major league markets.
You know, that's a great question. I wouldn't say it's anything out of the box or crazy to think about. I'll say one thing that definitely stands out. So in South Florida, obviously you have the Dolphins, you have the Heat, you have the Marlins, all of them located in Miami. The right. Florida Panthers are actually located in closer to Fort Lauderdale. So because of that, I was really focusing on the companies in like Palm Beach County, who that's the county.
North.
Yeah. So for them to get down to Miami, not always the easiest thing in the world. So I placed a big focus on Palm Beach and Broward really pushed the fact that we're like, we were Broward's team as opposed to the other teams who were like more Miami centric. But, you know, I'd attribute the other bit of success just to the fact of like, and this is a constant learning thing is, learning different industries, learning how to speak their language. You know, I had a great interest in real estate, so found a lot of success in commercial and residential real estate companies. But providing results for them, whether it's 3 hours of alone time with their top clients or top prospects or just showing appreciation to their employees, like find their need and keep going down that path.
Yeah. No, that's great.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I look back very fondly at my time with the Panthers. I was there overall for 4 years. Like I said, great leaders, people who I still talk to and draw inspiration from to this day, like Jim Willits, who's now senior vice president with the White Sox, and John Markowitz, director of ticket sales with the White Sox. So Heath Bennett, who's now with the University of Washington. I was so fortunate to just have so many people who not only believed in me from a professional level, but also on a personal level. And that means a lot. You know, when you have leaders who genuinely care about you as a human being, you want to run through a wall for them. But probably right around my third year, like I was starting to get that itch, like, all right, I'm ready to get into management. I want to lead. I want to do this, that, and the other. Unfortunately, there wasn't room for that with the Panthers. I was at my last year there promoted to a senior premium account executive role where I had the pleasure of taking over all weekly sales training. So here I am on a week-to-week basis, not only selling, but also creating, planning, and implementing our weekly sales training for all our account executives, our sales associates, our group executives, and the service team. And that's kind of where I found my second love in this business, which was being a small part of a big deal and somebody else's success and maybe giving somebody some, you know, tools or tidbits that work for me and then watching them make it their own and find their own success. Like that was so super rewarding for me and reaffirmed my strong desire to move into management. And like I said, there wasn't room for growth at the time. So I took a leap of faith, moved my family, my wife, and then what was she about almost a year old daughter across the state to Orlando and joined the Alliance of American Football. So here I am joining a spring football league as director of ticket sales. You know, we're promised certain things like there's enough funding for years and we're going to be a minor league system for the NFL and this, that, and the other. Really bought into it. And listen, no sour grapes on my end, right? I met some great people who played a big part in my career later on. But also, you know, we got to create something from nothing. There was no team prior to that. And you know, you learn a lot when you're doing everything from scratch. And being a part of the league was a lot of fun. The people were a lot of fun. I won't say great experience because it's never great to sit there and be told you're out of a job, especially with a young family. But, you know, I am a big believer that things happen for a reason, and it kind of leads you to the next place. Yeah. So that was one experience. And then from there, moved on to Orlando City Soccer Club, where I was doing group sales and tourism for them. Kind of a, I don't want to say a backwards move, but kind of a lateral move, which was kind of intentional. You know, my family had really settled into Orlando. Andrew, you were telling me before we were on air that you were from, or you spent some time in Orlando. You know how awesome it is there. And we kind of fell in love with the area. So like so many of us do, I did what I had to do for my family and wound up going to Orlando City Soccer Club, which was a real blessing in disguise, right? Like, I was never a big soccer fan. I can't tell you how many days I would spend there with some of the people that were there and just teach me about soccer, teach me about the Premier League and all the different leagues and everything like that. But what a fantastic organization. They were just phenomenal. You know, still to this day, I obviously can't speak highly enough about them. The culture was great, working under people like Chris Spano and Cameron Kendall. It was awesome, right? I never wanted to leave when I did, but I'll never forget late February of 2020, right before the pandemic hit, I was approached by a former colleague at the Alliance of American Football. Her name's Amy Wise. She's now a VP of marketing with Special Olympics International. But she had reached out to me and said, hey, I need somebody to come join Special Olympics and sell corporate partnerships. She's like, I remember your sales. I want you to do it. Andrew, I turned her down a few times. You know, for one, on the one hand, it was like I wanted to stay loyal to Orlando City. They provided me an opportunity when I needed it, being out of work. And I loved working there. You know, I'm a loyal guy, but you know, I enjoyed my time there. So I didn't want to leave. But, you know, you turn jobs down, they start bumping off the offer. You have to do what's right for your family. And it got to a point where it's like, well, it's stupid if I turn this down again. And what perhaps the biggest blessing in disguise I've ever experienced in my life, because I wound up starting the week we shut the country down in March 2020. Very fortunate not to have to go through some of the plights, trials, and tribulations that, you know, our comrades in the sports business went through during that time. I was part of an organization, an organizing committee that, you know, I was on the USA Games organizing committee. The USA Games is their every 4-year big event. So I knew, you know, I have 2 years before this event happens. We had funding. Nobody got laid off. Just like I said, what a tremendous blessing in disguise. And then, you know, in addition to that, not only was I selling corporate partnerships, which I had never done before, which is just adding more tools to the tool belt, right?
Yep.
I was actually able to oversee and run opening ceremonies, all ticketing for opening ceremonies. So 30,000 seat arena, nationally broadcast on ABC. I got to oversee that, learned a hell of a lot, made a lot of mistakes, but you learn from those, right? I was also fortunate enough to secure our celebrity games ambassadors. So all of a sudden I'm on calls with like Mark Cuban and, you know, big celebrities and their agents and things like that. It was crazy. I was able to secure the headline talent for the opening ceremony. So I got to dip my toe in a bunch of different things. And, you know, one common trend that I always tell young reps is like, my path, I was able to just keep adding tools to the toolbox, right? Whether it's with the Panthers and learning how to sell season tickets and then learning premium, whether it's being with the Alliance and learning how to like grow something from nothing and create different packages and hiring and things like that, to the time at Orlando City where I really learned about group sales, especially the tourism aspect of it being in Orlando, to now the Special Olympics where I'm doing corporate partnerships and overseeing a ticket team for the first time, truly. So, you know, it was an interesting ride because, you know, when you take a role like that, like there's a finite amount of time. I knew once the games happened, I was out of a job. So probably about 6 months before the games, I started really thinking about what do I want to do next? Where do I want to be next? I knew I was ready to get back into team sports. I missed it. I missed that feeling of game day. You know what I mean? That palpable energy.
Hell yeah.
You know, and I have a tremendously supportive partner. My wife knows the business that we're in and knows that there's going to be moving around from time to time. So I essentially gave her a map of the United States and was like, where would you be open to living?
Right.
And of course, somehow it looked like a political map almost. It was like, oh, the coast is basically
right? Well, so, you know, when you're living in South Florida and Central Florida, I mean, it really makes a lot of other places not look as good as they are, because yeah, it's paradise down here. I'm in St. Pete Beach now.
Oh yeah.
And I can't imagine like moving, but you know, it's one of those things. I mean, a lot of times you kind of hit on it, you know, with the Panthers. I mean, for you to advance, you really had to leave the organization. And, you know, it's rare to see, you know, a ton of opportunities within one organization. So a lot of times that's what you have to do really to be able to move up. So.
Absolutely. It's like betting on yourself, right? You know, sometimes you have to take that leap of faith, believe in your own talent and abilities, get out of your comfort zone. You know, like when I was with the Panthers, here I am, same team for 4 years. So I knew the building in and out. I knew everybody who worked there. Yeah. It's also the city, essentially the city I grew up in. So to leave that, it was tough. It was a tough decision to make.
Yeah. How did Atlanta come about?
Yeah. So like I said, with about 6 months left of my job at Special Olympics, started looking at where I wanted to be. I knew, like I said, wanted to be back in team sports. Basketball and the NBA was super intriguing to me, just because it seems like Teambo is a phenomenal organization. The way they teach and coach people up, the support that they give. So many leaders in our business came through the NBA. And quite frankly, you know, I mentioned earlier, I love baseball and whatnot, but basketball is arguably my favorite sport too. So I had a feeling that basketball was the direction I wanted to go. In addition to that, I now have two young daughters. And
congrats.
Thank you. It meant the world to me for them to see their father advocate for women's sports. And just from being a student of the game, like the WNBA is growing by leaps and bounds. So it was like, man, that's interesting. I wouldn't mind being on the WNBA side. You know, it's funny how things work out sometimes, though. Like, I'm in this unique situation where I could be a little picky about what I want to do next. So I kind of had like a list of 10 things that I really was looking for. Was fortunate enough to go and interview up north with a very prominent baseball team in Major League Baseball, very historic baseball team, phenomenal organization, great people. The role would have been awesome. It didn't check every box, though. Same deal, conversely, was brought out to California to interview with an NFL team who had been very successful, great organization, very cutting edge, more money than I had ever seen, right? But it just, again, didn't check every box. I wound up taking an interview with the Washington Mystics and all monumental sports as a whole, but specifically the Mystics and Go-Go, and really fell in love with the idea of being in the WNBA. Washington, as many know, that whole DMV area could be a little pricey. So right as I was in this interview process, all of a sudden one day I just happened to see Vice President Ticket Sales, Atlanta Dream. And I was like, huh, well, this is the league I want to be in. When I gave that map to my wife, the number one place we wanted to live was Atlanta.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It's a great area.
Right league, right city, right role. It was like, you know, I'm not a religious person, but it's like all these things
all came together.
Right. You know, and it's almost like kismet. Like, how did that happen? And I'll never forget. I think I interviewed with the recruiting team on a Monday, had a second interview on a Tuesday, met with my now boss on a Thursday, met with the team president on a Friday, and got the offer that day. So it all happened within like 4 or 5 days.
Wow. Yeah. And that's very rare.
Very. And that's where I say, like, it was almost like it was meant to be. Like, we just got along very well. We were speaking the same language. It was almost as though we had known each other for years, right? And one of the best decisions, easily, outside of marrying my wife, the best decisions I made was joining this organization in this league.
No, that's great. I mean, that's a great story. It's always good when it all kind of falls in line. And, you know, you mentioned about like early on how difficult it was to kind of get your foot in the door even. And so many people, you know, I get a lot of messages on LinkedIn about how you know, I'm graduating. How can I, you know, what can I do to get a position? And there's just so many people trying to get in. You have to be persistent, not give up. And it definitely challenges you mentally sometimes. I would think you mentioned, I think 20 plus interviews or applications, and you know, it's not easy.
No, certainly not. You hit the nail on the head, persistence, but I would also compliment that by saying, you know, having thick skin and being able to handle rejection, which if you're going to go into sales, you need that anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's obviously not a personal thing. You know, a great example, you know, and sometimes you might have all the things that a company is looking for, but maybe not that last part. And that happens, right? You know, we recently went through a hiring spree here where it came down to two candidates, one of which was very seasoned and polished from a sales perspective, really intelligent, really personal, great human being. The other was a young lady who, nowhere near as much as experience, but everywhere she had worked and been through school, she was a leader. And there was just some kind of like intangible about her, whereas like, you know, you talk about like blue chip prospects in sports. She was that prospect that I was like, oh man, give me some time with her to mold her. She's going to be a superstar in a couple of years with her own talent and whatnot. And we wound up going with her, you know, and it was like nothing wrong with the other candidate. He checked every box. It was just, wasn't 100%, right? We were 99%. Whereas the other person, we were like, yeah, let's go that route. So, you know, it's tough.
As you kind of have moved up the, you know, the ladder here, how much did relationships play into the opportunities and your advancement?
Yeah, great question. Well, I could speak specifically to that Special Olympics role. I mean, if I didn't have that prior relationship with Amy Wise when we worked at the Apollos, like that wouldn't have come to be. And it's funny, like she oversaw corporate partnerships at the Apollos. I was in ticket sales. We didn't work directly with one another, but we built a relationship, right? And that ultimately led to what happened later on. You know, I can't really say that relationships have gotten me too many roles, but what they do is somebody you can always count on for trustworthy advice. You know, like when I was offered that role with Special Olympics, I called a number of former colleagues just to, you know, what do you think? What would you do if it was you? You know, just get their thoughts and opinions. Even literally like 20 minutes ago, I'm working on some playoff pricing and you know, models and things like that. And, you know, it's something that I haven't done a lot before, but I knew some people that I had worked with in the past had done it. So I called them real quick and I was like, hey, do you guys do X, Y, and Z? So again, like that's where the relationships are super, super helpful. Because there are so many people in this business who have been doing it longer than I have, right? And I'm, like I said, a student of the game. I want to keep learning and growing. And who better to do it from than the people that you trust and appreciate the most from your past stops?
I want to go back to like early in your career, because it's interesting, because I kind of was in that same field, and it's the political side. And so at the same time, so I lived in Canton, Ohio at the time. And I remember just getting so sucked into the political stuff, and got heavily involved with, you know, the local, you know, political party, the state party, did a lot of campaigning. And then in 2010, I ran for state rep.
Oh, wow.
In Ohio. And it's an interesting business. And it's very similar in a lot of ways to sports, but then totally different. But there's such a competitive nature about it. You know, and I really enjoyed it. Little too, I don't know what the word is, maybe dirty for me, like long term, like you see a lot of stuff and it's like, oh, I don't know about this. But like,
you learn how the sausage is made.
Yeah, but you know, when you have somebody and you know, I consider myself an independent, but when Obama was running back then, that's when you were involved as well. It really struck with me and got me to take action. And, you know, I remember my whole family was involved, you know, campaigning and doing what we can. But, you know, how did that part of what you were doing help in sports, if at all?
That's interesting. You know, Andrew, to be honest, I would say in one specific way, it was motivation, because I never wanted to wind back in politics, that I better do really well in sports, right? But honestly, like, to answer your question directly, if I could point to one thing that really set me up for a career in sports, it was before politics. Put myself through college working in restaurants. I was a bartender. I was a server. I was doing all those hourly jobs, you know, that we do when we're a little bit younger. Before that, I didn't know how to talk to people. You know, I was probably a little introverted. But then all of a sudden, I become a server, a bartender, and I could talk to anybody at that point, right?
Liberal core quickly, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, before I met my wife, I was never very lucky speaking to the opposite sex. But if they're sitting at my bar, I could talk to anybody. You know what I mean? It's just, it gave me a lot of those social tools to where, you know, nowadays, even to this day, I'm still using a lot of it. You know, one specific example that I learned in the restaurant business is, if you're waiting on a family, let's say with a young kid, pay attention to that family, pay attention to that child. I mean, you know, treat them as if they're at the table. Don't just ignore them. Because if you treat the kid right, the parents feel good. And it's the same deal now, you know, and it's not anything that I'm like putting on, like I'm naturally like this, but if I'm walking through our arena, I see a family, I'll stop and talk to them and make sure to give that little girl, you know, a t-shirt or whatever it might be, or that little boy a signed basketball, because the smiles on their faces will equate to the smiles on the parents' faces. So yeah, to answer your question directly, I carry a lot with me from the restaurant business, way more so than politics.
Well, I think, that's key, because, you know, in the restaurant business, you're dealing with a wide variety of, you know, clients or customers, and it's similar in sports. You have fans from all walks of life, all income levels. And so I think being comfortable talking to a wide variety of people and being able to build that rapport quickly, especially on the ticket side, is pretty important.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that is first and foremost. I teach our team all the time, like, number one is relate to people. Make them stop looking at you as some dirty used car salesperson and as some, it's just a friend who's trying to provide solutions to whatever need they have, right? So yeah, you hit the nail on the head, like being able to relate, you know, because of that restaurant job, I could probably relate to and find common ground with just about anybody because of that.
What do you look for when you're trying to fill ticket sales positions? Like, anything specific, you know, background, whether it's internship or volunteer work or just the specific skill set?
So from a skill set perspective, it's very cliche, but I always preach the four C's, right? So number one, somebody who's coachable, somebody who can take feedback, apply, you know, the fix to it and make it their own. You know, I want somebody who could take that criticism and not kind of cower to it, but thrive off of it. That's number one. Number two, I'd say creativity. Somebody who could think outside the box. You know, I think back specifically to some sales that I had made in my career, and I made them strictly because I was being creative and thinking outside the box, right? So I want somebody who's not just going to do what everybody else does because they think that's the right thing to do, but treat it as your own little small business and go be creative and find your own way. Number three, probably this should be number one, but somebody who's competitive. I was very fortunate in my first days there with the Panthers. I sat next to two gentlemen who I still talk to this day, who we wanted to see each other succeed, no doubt about that. But we also wanted to beat each other's backsides as well, right? Like, and that's healthy competition. That's good. Yeah. It raised all of our games. So I love to find people who are like that. So competitive, collaborative, creative. I'm forgetting the fourth one off the top of my head. But somebody who can be a challenger, right? Somebody who can challenge the way people think, not just accept that objection and kind of cower, but think about different ways to challenge them and their thinking. Maybe a company doesn't think, I mean, really, no company really needs sports tickets. We hear that. I've gotten that objection many times. But challenge the way they think. Is what they're currently doing working for them? If not, we should try X, Y, or Z, right? Yeah. So those are probably the biggest attributes I look for. When it comes to the respective individual, like, you know, there's certain things that I really respect and admire. Somebody who makes themselves stand out from the pack, the consistent follow-up, not being pushy, but also letting somebody know, like, hey, I want this job and I'm the right here.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, we talked about the restaurant business. Like, I always look at people who worked in the restaurant business for two reasons. Like we said, A, they can talk to just about anybody, but B, they're hungry to get out of the restaurant business.
Right.
They're hungry to be successful. So yeah, I wouldn't say there's any like tried and true, like this is the kind of person that I'm looking for. Or these are the roles or internships that I'm looking for. I think it's more about passion. I think it's more about hard work. Yeah. Somebody who is just going to, quote unquote, cliche, leave it all out on the field and encompass those four C's.
Yeah, they got to, and I think that you touched on it, is, you know, having some drive or motivation, and it's kind of crazy. It's not as common out there as it used to be. It doesn't seem so. Finding that and making sure you have somebody that has that, I think is important. So.
No, you also just touched on something I think we all deal with to a certain extent, is like that generational understanding, right? Like each generation's different. You know, I'm working a lot with like Gen Z and younger, and learning what motivates them, what drives them is different than what drives myself as a millennial, which is probably different than what drives Gen Xers and boomers and things like that. So, you know, it's interesting. I try to always be a student of like the interpersonal relationships like that. And how do you extract the most production out of each individual person, right? Like you can't manage everybody the same.
People oh no. Like, I mean, that's the key. That's what I was about to just, you know, touch on, is you really need to know them to get the most out of them, you know, because everyone is different in their motivators and how they respond. Some people might need a little bit more firm voice. Some people might need more of a pat on the back.
And I'm learning the hard way sometimes too.
Yeah. I was hard headed. I learned it the hard way, but, what do you have any, programs that, you launched with Atlanta that have really worked or you're really excited about, you know, taking off?
Yeah. So, you know, I think number one, the biggest need that we have, or the biggest weakness perhaps, is our lack of brand awareness in the city of Atlanta, right? We've been in the city for over 15 years, and there are plenty of people who don't know of the Dream just yet. So we've created some single game ticket offers to help get people out to their first Dream game, or at the very least expand our database of buyers, right? Our database of buyers, while we sold a good amount of tickets over the past couple of years, it was only coming from a select group of people repeating their business.
Yep.
So we've done something this year called My First Dream Experience, where they actually get a ticket to the game, a post-game photo on the court, and then a meet and greet with one of our players. That has sold phenomenally. And it's, you know, as cheesy as it sounds, it's tremendously heartwarming when you see these little girls or little boys too get to interact with these larger than life WNBA athletes. In addition to that, we've also done a daughter date night promotion where nice. Again, a picture on the court, a ticket, a t-shirt. But I can't tell you, Andrew, you know, as somebody with two young daughters, I get a little mushy when I see these people taking pictures with their little girls, you know, on the court. And it's been overwhelming, the response to that. And I think that we've exposed our brand now to a bunch of new people. And one thing that you'll always hear is like, our games, it's a vibe, man. It's an energy. We're blessed with tremendously loud fans. It's almost like a college sports atmosphere. I've always said, I've said many times, it's a party with a basketball game going on. So once people come into the building and experience that, they're going to want to come back.
Yeah.
And that's really what those two packages has done. Outside of that, you know, really it was just instituting like the basic stuff that, you know, I never want to say that I'm the reason for any of it by any means, but right. Our team as a whole, like, bought into it. So it's, you know, there were no call minimums. There were right. no touch point minimums. There were no things like that. So I just took us to the basics. And I think that helped grow things considerably. You know, and then looking, honestly, like, we looked at our schedule. We knew certain games were going to sell real well. We knew we wouldn't have a problem Friday night versus the Las Vegas Aces.
Right.
Where we would have a problem is a less desirable opponent on a Tuesday or Wednesday, especially in Atlanta where the traffic is no fun and trying to get to a 7 o'clock game.
That's no joke in Atlanta.
No joke.
Cannot stand. Do you live close to the office? How long have you been?
I literally moved 2 weeks ago. I bought a house 2 weeks ago in Marietta, which is about a 50-minute drive to the office. Before that, it was only about half an hour. It wasn't too bad, but
I think it's not too far from Ackworth, right?
No, not too bad.
Yeah, my uncle and grandmother live there. I just actually was there a few weeks ago, but yeah.
You got to experience it firsthand, the madness.
Yeah. So I feel for you now. I'm like, wow, that's. I'd be like, I want to live at the arena if I can.
You know what it is? It's. That's where the good schools are. And you get to
learn. I mean, you do what
you got to do, right?
How old are your daughters now?
I have a 5-year-old about to be 6, although she's really 5 going on like 35.
Exactly.
And then I have a almost 2-year-old as well. So they're very, very young, very impressionable.
Well, let me tell you this.
As far as sports goes now, you know, they're used to sitting courtside and sitting in suits. And I'm like, I didn't do that till I was an adult.
I'm not sitting in general pop, Dad.
Yeah.
that's what I said. I started young. My daughter's 26 and my son's 19. So they grew up in the sports business, kind of like you just mentioned with your daughters. They're, you know, behind the scenes, they're on the field or the court, and that's all they know. So they don't even know that that's cool. As a kid, for me, I would have been like, that's the best thing ever. But I think you kind of talked about it too. For me, one of the most rewarding things about being in this business is the memories that we get to create and that people will keep for, you know, the rest of their lives. I mean, it takes me back to like my childhood going to sporting events or special events, you know, with my, you know, grandparents or friends or school, family. And so every game that I'm at, I usually take a few minutes. I usually go to the top of the arena somewhere or stadium, and I just watch the fans and just like see, like we all know, like we'll have hiccups here and there. And, you know, the fans, you just see, they don't have a clue, you know, about most of that stuff, but they have a great time.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what it's all about. Like, I love that aspect of it.
No, you're 100% right. You know, if you ask our team now about me, one thing they would probably say is that I talk way too much about putting smiles on faces and creating lifelong memories, but that's the business that we're in, right?
And like, it is.
We all have tough days at work, but I'll never forget, especially when I was with the Panthers, like I'd have those tough days at work. I'd go out there and look at the ice and realize, like, this ain't too bad, right? And like,
right.
Now, I go and I look out the window and I'm looking down at downtown Atlanta. I see Mercedes-Benz Stadium and State Farm Arena. And I'm like, things are pretty good. Like, I don't really have much to complain about. But, you know, it's funny you bring that up. Like, when I was a kid, I think I told you this. I come from a military family. So my father wasn't around very much. He was a sergeant. But we had a little mini package when we were living in New York for the New York Saints of the old lacrosse league. And I knew that was my guaranteed time with my dad. No matter what was going on, it was him and I taking that drive, going to games every couple of weeks. And here we are 30 years later. He's an old man and I'm a middle-aged man. And we still talk about those memories and we still laugh about those times. That's lifelong memories. You know what I mean? And that's the business that we're in. We could be no disrespect to people who sell insurance, but I'm sure it's nowhere near as exhilarating, right? We are very lucky to be in this business.
And it's not. I owned an insurance agency for some years, and I could tell you it's the most boring thing you'll ever
do. Yeah, a little different. A little different. But we sell fun.
Yeah. There you sell, you know, safety. But, no, I love the Atlanta area. I love I don't know if switching arenas for the Dream has had a big impact, but from all the videos and photos and everything I've seen, the atmosphere there just looks great. And I think before you guys were playing it at Georgia Tech, I believe, right?
Yeah.
So now you're playing out where the G League plays as well. And it's out by the airport.
Yep.
So have you noticed that? I think you came in though, right when they moved to the new arena, or?
I think it was a season after. So it's hard for me to directly compare, but what I can say is that there's a lot of positives and negatives, right? It's best of both worlds. On the one hand, yeah, we have the smallest arena in the W. We're not going to hide that fact, but because it is such an intimate seating arrangement, it creates that energy and vibe. Like I say, a party every time.
Yeah.
You know, I'll specifically remember last year, we were losing by like 30. We were out of the game at halftime. You would never know by looking at the arena, right? They were just having a blast. On the other hand, we don't own the arena. So that presents some challenges, right? We have great partners down there at the Gateway Center Arena, but there are certain things you wish you could do or that you just can't do because it's not your arena. So that presents some certain challenges. But, you know, one thing I could say about this organization, we have phenomenal, phenomenal leadership. Our team governors, from Larry Gottesdiener to Suzanne Hebert, and of course, Renee Montgomery, former WNBA player, they provide the resources that we need and they spare no expense. And I know that we've been casually talking about for a little while, maybe looking at a women's only training facility down the road, combined with a Dream specific, you know, 10,000 seat arena. We're probably still a good way away from that. We got to build this base up to be able to move and consistently sell out that building. But my biggest concern would be losing that energy and vibe should we move to a bigger place, right? You know, we talk about it from time to time. If we were to play a game at State Farm, it's awesome. We're in this big NBA size building. We could put tens of thousands of people in there, but would we lose some of what we created? And what we've created is part of what keeps people coming back.
And it becomes part of your brand, an expectation. So, you know, people take that as part of the game day experience.
Yeah, they've come to expect it. Yeah, whether it's a swag surf or singing along to the DJ, like, or some of the performers that we have, like, people have come to expect that from a Dream game. Now.
So growing up, you know, kind of South Florida and kind of moving around in the military, what teams did you root for? Do you root for now? Like, who are your sports teams?
Yeah, so I spent the first 13 years of my life in Long Island, New York. So all my sports fandoms were formed in New York. I didn't have much choice but to be a New York Giants fan. My dad definitely wasn't going to let me be a Jets fan. I also remember at a young age, he's an older gentleman from Brooklyn, like going back to like the Brooklyn Dodgers. So he inherently has this like natural distaste and hate for the Yankees. So he told me if you like the Yankees, you can get out at a very young age. So huge Mets fan. There's a Mets poster behind me here. And then, basketball, unfortunately, it's been tough for 20 years, but some things to hang my hat on now. I am one of the biggest New York Knicks fans you will find, and I can finally admit it out loud now, which is nice.
That was my team as a kid, was the Knicks.
Oh, yeah.
John Starks was my favorite player.
Absolutely.
So,
you know, but listen, I say all that, and some days I wish, man, if you would have made me a Yankees fan, it would have saved some heartache over the years. I'm New York born, New York bred, and love my New York sports teams. Outside of the Liberty, I'm Atlanta Dream.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Having moved around a little bit, I try to support the local teams, but if they play my like real teams, I got to go with the real teams. But I'm down here in Tampa, so I support the Bucks and the Lightning and the Rays. So
I was fortunate enough when I was with the Panthers to go to an all-star game that Tampa had hosted, and I was blown away at what the Lightning have created now down there. I was about to say up there, down there.
A machine. They have a great operation.
And when I was with the Panthers and I saw that, I thought to myself, man, hockey in Florida
works.
It can work, you know, and now it's great to see, you know, years later, the Panthers have kind of created that down in South Florida, especially with this latest cup run. So, you know, phenomenal organization over in Tampa. They're unbelievable.
All right, last few things. I always like to get feedback on food. What are some of the food spots in Atlanta you like?
You know, I've been here a little bit over a year, and I probably haven't scratched the surface of all.
A lot there.
One place definitely stands out, though. It's a place called Pascal's. It's down here in downtown Atlanta. It is a very historic building. Dr. King and all the civil rights leaders would use Pascal's as like their meeting place. So you walk in and you feel the history. There's pictures all over the world, all over the walls of Dr. King and Ralph Abernathy and all the great civil rights leaders from years past. But almost as important to that, their fried chicken is some of the best chicken I've ever tasted in my life. Sides are delicious. I mean, I whenever I have people in town, I always recommend we go there. And then me and my wife for a while there were doing this, trying out every Mexican food restaurant possible in Atlanta. Spent way too much money on it. Found some really good spots. Found some really not great spots. But you know, when you come to Atlanta, you gotta go southern, right? You gotta go with that southern cooking, the fried chicken, the okra, the cornbread, all that stuff, the greens. There's
good wing places too in Atlanta. I wish I could think of the one I went to. It was like 2 a.m. and it was unreal. But yeah, I mean, that's one thing I love about traveling is just you know, the different food in the different areas. There's a steakhouse I like in Atlanta called Hal's. It's what's that little area called? It's just north of the city.
Buckhead.
Really, really good steakhouse. So if you haven't tried that, definitely it's a good date night. You know, if you can, you know, get a sitter or something.
I was about to say, you babysitting for me?
Hey, I mean, I'm getting old. I don't know if I can take the kids, but 5's not too bad. The little one, I don't know.
Now put on a TV. She's good. Or give her a couple books. She's good. But one thing with Atlanta too that I noticed when I first moved here is the unique combinations of food, right? Like you could go someplace and find like ribs and Chinese food, or like obviously the chicken and waffles. But it's really unique, some of these combinations, and you think it wouldn't work, and then you try and you're like, yeah, that does work, right? And to your point, the wings, I mean, the lemon pepper wing is like what Atlanta is almost known for. As much as the state of Georgia is known for peaches, Atlanta is known for lemon pepper wings.
Yeah, no, it's good. I can't wait to get back up now that, you know, my family's settled in there. I'll be coming up a bunch. I usually drive up. It's not too bad. So
like 5-6 hours, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
Could get old after a while, but on a one-time thing, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's like on a borderline. But no, I appreciate you joining me. It was great chatting with you. Definitely, I would like to keep in touch. Maybe next time I'm in Atlanta, we can grab some wings or something.
Absolutely. Please do. Please don't be a stranger.
So thanks again.
Thanks so much, Andrew. Best wishes to you. Definitely let me know when you're back in the A.